Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We are taping this on Wednesday night, and I have Dan McKay on the right.
Everyone, welcome to Both Sides of the Aisle. And it's Pledge Drive Week.
Good time for public radio. And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani. Welcome, Shireen.
Hello, and hi to our listeners.
I mentioned that we're taping this in the evening because that's kind of a different rhythm for us. And, you know, Dan and Shireen, the rhythm that I have in my mind is I'm still just really sad and bummed out from the presidential debate this week that reflected so poorly on our country and on our political system. I don't know where to begin.
Oh, well, what bothered you about it?
Oh, unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud, personal attacks on Hunter Biden, appeals to white supremacists, and just a real unpresidential showing by really both candidates at times, but mostly from our president. And
I think
we don't have to break it down
it
totally.
But on who you like as to whether or not you saw mostly one or the other, because anytime you have... I think Biden could have easily won the debate had he acted like the gentleman in the room. But unfortunately, he went the opposite way, right? And so he tried to make, I don't know what he tried to do. But when you start calling the president of the United States like a clown and, you know, you start mimicking the chants of social media in a presidential debate, I'll argue that like that was, and you know, that was in my mind just as bad as anything President Trump did. And I'm with you though. I was really grateful that the debate beforehand was the gubernatorial debate, and it showed me how wonderful state politics can be. And I put on Twitter, and it's been interesting to see the reaction, but I said, debates like that make me super grateful for federalism.
Shireen, love to hear your comments, but you know, I think those were low moments for Vice President Biden, some of the things he said, but it was like 90%, 10% compared to what President Trump was doing. And I was so uncomfortable with him calling out Hunter Biden's cocaine use in a national, you know, debate platform like that. It felt like such a low thing for someone who struggled with substance abuse and drug addiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a particularly dark moment, but it's also just generally reflective of where this president is. He cannot run on his dealing with the coronavirus. He cannot run on, you know, providing solid and firm leadership through, you know, this terrible pandemic. We have more Americans hungry right now than we have had in a very long time. We are losing so many Americans to isolation, addiction in this time. And that president decided to show up and name call. And Dan, I really just have to say, in particular, his inability to clearly decry white supremacy was disturbing. Given the rise of violence in our community, driven by, according to our own federal government, white supremacist groups and the kind of militarism that they're bringing to the level of intensity and firearms that they are bringing to what are generally mostly peaceful protests, he cannot decry these groups because he needs their votes. And I feel like this... It was a bad moment. I will agree. I did not appreciate Vice President Biden, you know, I think taking the bait, honestly, but it was an impossible situation with a president who simply cannot come and present his vision for the future. He is also a person who cannot follow rules. And that was just reiterated over and over and over again, as it has been through his entire life.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what'd you think of Chris Wallace's performance, the moderator from Fox News?
Well, I honestly, like, I can appreciate a lively debate moderator. What I don't like is the moderator debating the candidates that they're talking to, right? And while they may disagree with a perspective on a candidate or one, you know, they might be wanting to fact check or do some of those things. I totally understand that. But, like, I thought he was inappropriate on several times with the president. But I think he was also, like, I would say he was unilaterally inappropriate with both of the candidates. And I was like, that was, I just thought it was bad form. I guess I've been to a lot of debates, Dan, and I expect it to be done better.
Yeah, Dan, what about Shireen's point about the Proud Boys? These are people that carry, you know, bear mace and clubs and guns, and they've been banned from Facebook and Twitter. They only are on the Telegram channels. They're anti-Jewish, anti-Muslim, Western chauvinists, they call themselves. I mean, this can't help the president, and it's certainly bad for the country.
But you and I, like, when they brought it up, I had to Google who the Proud Boys were. Like, I didn't know. I know that's probably hard for anybody to accept, but I'm not keeping track of white supremacist groups. You know what I mean? Like, President Trump, even this week, said, or, you know, today they asked him about it, and he said, I didn't know who the Proud Boys were. And so, to the president's point, like, if you ask somebody, if you ask a president or anybody about something specific, remember it was the governor of Texas, Rick Perry. They asked him about who the ambassador was of one of the countries, and he was kind of lost and shuffling and that kind of thing. Asking a candidate cold about something that specific, I'm not sure that that's terribly a fair thing to judge him on. But the president did say, we want those groups to step aside, to stand aside, to stay. All those things are good things to say.
By.
Right. But what you're interpreting, what you heard was stand by so you can be ready to attack. And I think what the president said was stand aside, like get out of the way, stay out of this conversation. Yeah. Don't cause more problems. That's what I heard. But afterwards, I can see where Shireen takes, you know, some umbrage with that statement. I will just say it's possible that both of us are like, it's possible that both of us are right. But I really, knowing the president and where he's been on the race issue, I don't accept that he's a racist. I just don't.
So, I mean, that is just, I really have to ask you, like, Dan, when we had white supremacist groups marching in the streets of Charlottesville, he clearly could not at that point say there that white supremacy has no place in this country. He couldn't say that.
Well,
he hasn't,
I don't think
yet.
You can, and I'm not taking anything away from that, but saying that white supremacists, see, I don't like white supremacy. I don't think anybody does, right? But I don't think you can say there's no place in this country for any group. You can't literally say America doesn't have a home for anyone. I would prefer people not think those things. I would prefer them not hate anybody. But when you say that America can't have a home in America if you don't agree with one policy or another, I will take the stance of Lincoln in that standpoint, because you have to be careful what people you say you have to agree with and which ones you don't, because eventually you might not agree with them. And that was the point that President Lincoln made so many years ago about slavery. He said, be careful trying to say somebody with darker skin with you can only darker skin than you can only be a can be a slave to you. I say, because you never know when you're going to be the person who's darker than someone else. And I think the president back then was right then, and I think they're right today. We cannot have thought police. Now, racism, crimes against race, crimes, you know, hate crimes, all those other things, they're all wrong. We have laws preventing them.
They are rooted in white supremacy.
But telling people that they can't have a place in America because of how they feel personally, Shireen, I can't shut the Democrats out of Utah. Right. But I will tell you that more than 60% of Utah doesn't agree with the Democratic Party. But I'm saying, fine, bring the Democrats in. We're good.
This is a false equivalency beyond. It just is. So I just have to get back to this, because the outcomes of white supremacy are deeply detrimental to many in our society, and they benefit a very few. And what we are seeing over and over again is a rise of radicalism in that space. And we have
on both sides.
And we have federal officials saying that one of the scariest things, one of the biggest threats that we have, is the increasing militarism of white supremacy in this country. That has to be addressed. And we have to reckon with the long and traumatic history that we have of racism in this country. This president is not equipped to do that.
Let me try something from the political middle just to get this from both of you, and then we'll move into the second segment. But I read Peggy Noonan's work pretty regularly. She's a Wall Street Journal columnist, former speechwriter for Bush and Reagan. But she's written a column where she's basically talking about this profound national deterioration. And she's basically saying, get ready for an election crisis. We won't know who wins on election night. That's pretty likely, given the amount of mail-in balloting that'll occur. There will be in this danger zone between the election and inauguration, and a very real possibility of violence.
Yeah.
And that's why, Dan, whether you want to philosophize about, you know, thought police, and Shireen, you know, all of your incredibly articulate way of expressing the problems with white supremacy, just from a pragmatic middle of the road position, we're moving into a danger zone. So let's talk about it some more in the next segment. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about the presidential debate. It's kind of a, I don't know, a hot mess, I guess, but it's also just kind of a downer for me. From the political middle, I'm just going to throw this out to Dan and Shireen. I think our country's basically like a sick patient right now. There's a sickness, and I think we have a choice, and it's a choice to, you know, reset in some way. Joe Biden would be a transitionary candidate in that respect, but somehow we have to get out of the Trump world. This is just from the political middle. I read a quote the other day that said, 4 years is an emergency, 8 years is a permanent condition. We can't have that. And my advice for fellow moderates is to be a part of the change, find a post-partisan choice. And if you're a Republican, get back to conservative principles. And if you're a Democrat, accept a bigger tent. Shireen?
I think our tent is pretty big. You know, one of the things that kind of came up last night was that Trump tried to paint Biden into a very progressive corner of our party. And that's just simply not where many people are. We largely agree on some big ideas around expanding access to healthcare, protecting the environment, doing better in terms of taking care of our air and our water. But when it comes down to it, Biden has been over his history a much more centrist Democrat. And I think that that's the space that we're offering for people who are looking to end the chaos, the ineffective and sort of, I think, just like grinding experience of the Trump presidency, that there's an opportunity here to vote for somebody who is fundamentally a decent person. And wasn't my first choice, and I will be proudly voting for Joe Biden. But I'll tell you, there are a couple of things that stand out to me. One is the interview he did, and I think it was on Stephen Colbert after his son died. And I think if you want to just get a glimpse of somebody's humanity, it's a really beautiful interview that happens there. As a person who came into politics from my own grief, seeing somebody be so raw about their experience was really powerful and was inspirational to me. Another thing that I think is important about him, I had the opportunity to meet him, and I don't know if I've told this story before, but he said, oh, you're on the county council. He was in county politics, and he was like, I ran for the Senate because it was too much work. And that kind of jovial way that, you know, you build a bridge to somebody, try to, you know, connect. That was the vice president of the United States, making me feel like this small contribution that I make in public service was really meaningful. And it was something I'll never forget, you know. And like I said, that he wasn't my first choice. And I would be proud to see him lead our country in this critical moment.
Dan, I love that I can say that I know someone that has met the vice president.
Oh, wow.
Did you hear him say, Dan, look into the camera? Biden was really trained on his camera, you know, body language. He looked into the camera a lot, and he looked into the camera and he said, this is my party now. This is my party.
Yeah.
Did everybody see the hubbub on social media about whether or not Joe Biden had a microphone that was like prompting him? He has a little wire inside of his jacket that was, you know, prompting him and stuff.
I mean,
I just thought that was funny. I don't think he did, but I do think that those kinds of things are always super interesting about debates. I remember a Utah debate.
Oh yeah, in today's technology world,
a candidate got in trouble for wearing a watch.
Oh yeah,
you know, they had an Apple Watch on, and they were concerned that they were receiving text messages to prompt them on comments. It was really so. That's always kind of a fun underlying part of debates.
Having been through this once, I can just say it would be incredibly difficult, especially given what Trump was doing with the like constant chatter, to have that and something else. It would be impossible.
Yeah, hard. Hey, I want to get to the Chris Peterson and Spencer Cox local gubernatorial debate. But before we go there, we have to talk about the Trump tax returns. And, you know, when I saw the news hit that the New York Times had them, when I saw that he'd paid no income tax for 10 or 15 years, when I saw that he'd paid like $750 each year of the past two, it just made me think. I mean, I teach tax and expenditure policy at the University of Utah. It made me think that something's not right. I mean, this is fraudulent, you know, that you can have that little of a tax burden. Dan, you're in real estate. Is it really how it works that you have a loss in 1 year and you can just carry it forward for the rest of your life?
Well, there are limitations on how far you can carry it forward. And so, but, you know, if you think about it, not all income, not all jobs are a 10-year or a 1-year event, right? And so paying tax on a 1-year event when you're on a high and then you're not paying any tax and you're down here, but your income bracket keeps you out of other social programs, like that would be a disaster. And so what they found in the IRS, and this is actually good monetary policy when you're trying to balance through, is the government is a great balancer. And so sometimes you're up and then you pay a bunch of tax and then you can constantly claim losses against that for a period of time.
You, I just you want give you to your know, daughter large claiming, contracts.
Well, you know,
when she's an employee of the company.
Yeah. But if you know, the people in Hollywood, notice they're keeping their heads down. Guess why? All of those expenses are how they keep up their livelihood as well. And so a lot of those guys are like, well, make sure we protect that because their hair, their makeup, all that other stuff, that's all tax. But that's part of them. That's their image. And same it is with the president when he was the apprentice guy.
This is part of why I think this president is so disturbing to me. The difference between the world that he lives and traffics in, where he paid less federal income tax than, you know, people who are teachers, firefighters, people who work people who work normal jobs, right? The fact that he lives in that world where he is writing off, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in hair and makeup, and I get that you're saying this is something that the uber rich do all the time, but this is where I get so distressed by the grievance politics that he has brought to the table, basically saying, I'm like you. He couldn't be less like us. You have more in common, Dan, I know you're not going to like this, but like, you have more in common with your Democrat neighbor than he has in common with most people. And I think that we have lost sense of that. And it's really important to remember that, like, most of us live in the same world and face a lot of the same challenges. And it's absolutely inappropriate to me that this person has been getting away with not kicking in for our military, for our parks, for, you know, the basic things that hold this country together.
But let's be clear about a few things.
And he's also done the same thing with his nonprofits. I mean, those have been like proven to be fraudulent over and over again.
Full statement of taxes. We do not have verified releases of what those information are. One, two. And the other part of this is, you know, one, we don't have the full story. But the last point I'll make is, honestly, the president could obviously release all this stuff, but he is still this $74 million, which it could be more, could be less. They're still fighting that out with the federal government. And so it's not common for that information. In fact, it is federal, like there are federal laws protecting your tax returns without you voluntarily giving them. So I love that nobody's really super sensitive about protecting someone's personal information. They're much more excited about wanting to talk about the narrow window of what they have about taxes.
It's a you know pattern what? Of
the
behavior,
fact of the matter
though.
Is that you could make that much in America and be able to carry through some of those losses and changes. It doesn't bother me that much because every neighbor I have, my Democrats on both sides of me, I know it's been a tough neighborhood to live in. But I will say the Democrats on both sides of me, everybody I know is all trying to minimize their tax liability. every single one of them, despite what the county constantly wants to raise our taxes. We are all trying to find ways to avoid them. So, or to mitigate them. So maybe that's
probably
a better way to say it.
You should probably talk to your cities about that. Our increase is quite minimal.
So let's transition to the Chris Peterson, Spencer Cox debate. They've had their last formal debate now. This was the big one sponsored by the Utah Debate Commission. Shireen, you'll be happy to know I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Well, I'll just say this. I believe that Spencer Cox, his sensibilities, his smarts, his experience, his energy, I think the sky's the limit for this guy. Spencer Cox will do really well as our governor. This was my first time seeing Chris Peterson in an extensive amount of time. He was impressive. He's the best Democratic candidate of my adult life. Mm. That, you know, and, you know, you can just kind of think through who's been. I was Scott Matheson. I once introduced the University of Utah Coffee and Politics, but Chris Peterson is on that level in what I saw. Intelligent, his moderate stance on issues, his likability. You could tell he was a product of our culture.
Yeah.
So I thought it was, you know, Dan, we would be so lucky to have either of those guys as our governor.
Well, and I actually saw this on social media afterwards saying, hey, can we just take Spencer Cox and Chris Peterson, make them our president and vice president, and I think the nation would be in a great spot, right?
The contrast.
That says something. Yes. That says something to how strong Utah is and the talent pools we have of qualified, good people. And I haven't yet had a chance to, in full confession, I haven't had a chance to see the debate, but I have seen some of Chris's stuff, and I do think he's a very intelligent person. I'm going to vote for Spencer Cox, but there you go.
Well, it was civil. It was substantive. It was positive.
Yeah, and I think people really, I couldn't be more proud of Chris Peterson. And I know, I feel like, Dan, you made some very mean comments last week about what it's like for Democrats to run statewide here. And this is a person who is, you know, it's an uphill battle. Having a candidate as thoughtful, as dedicated to fighting for working people, as committed to a bright future for Utah as Chris Peterson is, to have such an intelligent, warm person who could really do the job and do service to Utahns makes me unbelievably proud. And I think if people are frustrated with what they're seeing, I hope they will take a serious look at him.
Yeah. Hey, I'm curious, Dan and Shireen, what differences did you see in these two candidates? So there was the obvious mask mandate one, but it's really not that big of a difference, because if you have a mask mandate in Salt Lake County and Utah County, I mean, you're getting like the biggest part of the state. I think like healthcare and the education ballot initiative, those were the two big changes I saw. Shireen, you're agreeing, it looks like.
Yeah, well, I mean, so Chris Peterson voted with a majority of Utahns on things like anti-gerrymandering, Medicaid expansion, was for the tax referendum, so against the tax on food and the decisions that were being made there, supported medical cannabis. And Spencer Cox, I guess I'm not entirely clear where he was on all of those things, but my understanding is he was not with the majority of voters on all of those issues. Chris Peterson was. And there were deeper levels there, especially when it came to education funding, that I thought were very insightful. Utahns repeatedly say that that's their top issue, that they're frustrated that we do have the lowest per pupil spending when you look at the state investment. And really to have an alternative there and an option there that was bringing something else to the table is refreshing for me.
Dan, as I listen to it, Spencer Cox has all the benefit of being a legislator, being lieutenant governor for all these years, and Chris Peterson's new to this, and his depth was pretty darn good, but Spencer can draw on a deep well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say the one thing that was really clear in the debate is I think they were trying to out-nice each other, which is very rare for a debate when you're trying to draw, you know, distinction between the two.
It's the most aggressively the nicest Utah thing you can do.
Yeah, I was going to say, so who's the nicest? I'm going to say that Spencer was clearly the nicest of the nice guys. And Shireen, you can take Chris.
We have about a minute left, and let's just spend the time talking about public radio, KCPW. You know what I love, Dan and Shireen, is locally produced content. there's just something that is the richness, the granularity, the insights that can come from local content, from public radio. So it's Pledge Week. Go to kcbw.org and make a contribution. Shireen?
I would just say, given the demonstrations of incivility that we've seen, certainly on a national level, I am so grateful for a place where you can go to get largely, I hope you find it to be very civil discourse, where we can really disagree, but have deep, and I hope you find the meaningful conversations. Grateful for this radio station.
Dan McKay.
I would say the same. I just love the opportunity, honestly, to get together and appreciate the vehicle we have at KCPW. If you've got an extra $1 million and you need a tax write-off, I cannot think of a better place to invest it. But I just want everybody to know it does take money to put together these shows and to put together this great content, you know, my contribution not included. So please do support at KCPW.
That's great. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Keep listening, everybody, and stay safe.